Hi, I'm Terry, Instagram's sassy sober mum. Welcome to my podcast, Sober Stories from Everyday People. Bringing you stories from people just like you and I, the aim of this podcast is to share our experiences with drinking and how we got and stayed successfully sober. Not sure if you know already, but I offer 6-week and 100-day coaching opportunities to work with me one-to-one each week. In these 50-minute sessions, I will be guided by your particular set of challenges and experiences and tailor a style of support that suits your life, your needs, but also covering many of the basics that you expect in sobriety. You will learn about why you drink, why it's hard to stop drinking, what you need to do to succeed, the science around cravings, poor sleep, managing your thoughts, and finally, powerful tools like reframing, taking back your power, implementing boundaries, and building self-confidence. In the 100 days coaching, you also get WhatsApp access with me directly for any urgent or general support outside of the sessions. Here's what Sarah says about the 100 days coaching with me. What have you gained from coaching with me?
So much. I can't even begin to tell you what an amazing journey this has been. I have gained insight. It's probably been the biggest thing, and how to cope, coping mechanisms, strategies. The biggest thing I've learned has been learning how to reframe, reframing situation, reframing what to do, you know, if those thoughts pop up. I did come to you obviously a little bit destroyed, or more than destroyed, and on the floor, but I knew that I had it in me to do it, and with your help and insights and strategies and what homework you gave me just made it so much easier and normalised it as well. If I had an issue with something, you were there.
It's so nice to hear that feedback, and it's just such a privilege to help people to feel supported on this journey and to see people flourish after the 100 days is finished is a really, really wonderful feeling. So if you're interested in working with me for 6 weeks or 100 days, please go to the website www.sassysobermum.com/coaching and you can send an inquiry from there, or just contact me on Instagram or send me an email, whatever suits you the best. I usually open up my diary once a month to take on a new 100-day client. So let me know and we can see if we can get you booked in. Okay, let's jump into the episode. Hello, and welcome to Sober Stories from Everyday People. Today, I'm talking to Jade, who's in Aberdeen in northeast Scotland, and she's been sober for 3 years and 4 months. Jade, I've known you for a while. Obviously, we're connected on Instagram. You are the lovely face behind Scottish and Sober. I'm delighted to finally get you on my show. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Terry. It's so nice to meet you finally. And I'm delighted to be here as well. Thank you for having me on.
It's a pleasure. It's so funny, isn't it, when you finally meet sort of face to face, or even in this situation over Zoom, somebody that you have followed or admired or just watched, you know, for a long time. It's like you know each other.
Yeah, I know. I know. It really is. It's a lovely feeling, because I've done a few of these podcasts now, and you almost feel like you already know them, which makes it breaks the ice, doesn't it? It's great.
It does. Yeah, it really does. So anyway, why don't you introduce a bit about who you are, what you do? Yeah, let's get an insight before we jump into your story.
Sure. Thank you. I am, as you say, Jade, Scottish and sober, and mum of one, soon to be two. So I am pregnant at the moment with my second, with a 7-year age gap. So, you know, doing it this time round feels completely different, because I am obviously now sober, and just, as we were saying before we started this, just soaking up every minute really, and trying to be as present as I can. And I think being sober helps with that massively. Work in the oil and gas industry in Aberdeen, as a lot of people do, and really have just found a passion for sobriety and all things creative around, you know, helping people and using my Instagram page to connect with other folk and really support people on their journey and just spread the word that there's nothing shameful or dull about being a sober person. because it's just the complete opposite, and I will shout it from the rooftops for as long as I can.
I love that. I share that. I'll be on that rooftop with you. I agree with that so much. And, you know, I think sometimes it does probably look to the untrained eye or to the outside that, you know, we are displaying all the wonderful, lovely benefits and side of sobriety. But, you know, as we will probably understand with you, you know, we all go through those, I like to term them discomforts in the beginning. Mm-hmm. You know, we all go through those challenges and things like that. So, why don't we go back to the beginning and talk about your life with alcohol? What did that look like?
Sure. So, yeah, my life with alcohol, I suppose, started out just like many of us do, drinking, you know, 14, 15, experimenting with friends, all the usual kind of things that feel quite normal at the time. It's fun, it's carefree. And then as I got older, my drinking became more regular and really became something that was out of hand in terms of the hold it had over me and my habitual drinking. So I think, you know, became a mum, you're then less social, but you're still finding yourself pouring wine in the evenings when you're cooking dinner, and really had quite a turbulent few years after I became a mum. You know, I was due to get married and called off the wedding. Had a bit, if I'm honest with you, and I haven't really said this out loud very often, but I think I did have a bit of a mental breakdown. I think I just hit a wall. I was on self-destruct. Becoming a mum is a challenging thing in itself. And I think when you already have maybe unresolved trauma that you need to address, it can just explode. And I think alcohol was my crutch, and it became something that I relied upon heavily just to escape. And then, you know, found myself in a very, very toxic relationship after that, where drinking was encouraged to the, you know, to the extreme, which didn't help. And really my relationship with alcohol just became something that was so problematic. I still don't really call myself an alcoholic, and, you know, I've no problem with the term, but it's just, I don't feel like I was an alcoholic, but I was certainly relying on it. And it was something that I knew was only going to get worse, because, you know, you build up that tolerance, don't you? And you know, a bottle of wine suddenly isn't hitting you in the same way that it would have a couple of years ago. And you think, okay, there's an issue here. So yeah, it wasn't great.
Yeah. No, I love that. That really sums it up, doesn't it? It just wasn't great.
Yeah, just wasn't
totally
great.
I totally relate to that. It wasn't great. But I think the challenging thing here, isn't it, because we're talking about over a long time, really. I mean, I don't know about you, but for me it was 27 years I drank alcohol. Like,
that's
three decades, which is quite mind-blowing. I smoked for 25 as well, which is quite crazy. There, unfortunately, that drinking landscape, it's very difficult to navigate. It's very fuzzy, you know, it's quite blurred in that sometimes it would be fun, sometimes
you
would moderate, sometimes you might surprise yourself that you know, you just didn't drink. I remembered feeling like, gosh, I haven't drunk as much as I thought I might, and well done me, I'm so brilliant. But then next time I might go a bit harder in celebration.
Exactly.
Or, you know, a great example of that is after Dry January, just going nuts on February the 1st because
you've done so well.
Because you've done so well. So I think that it's kind of, it is quite a slow, steady decline, isn't it? Because with bursts of drinking more than normal, reflecting those up and down experiences that you're going through in life. But yeah, I really relate to what you're saying there, that it just sort of became, I always felt like I was quite emotionally attached to alcohol. You know, I used it to fix bad emotions or perceived, you know, negative emotions, sadness, mm-hmm. and things, but I also used it to elevate
100%
good emotions, and to get onto, you know, I'm at 10, but I want to get on step 15 now, or, you know, whatever, and it would push me up there. But I do think that tolerance piece is quite alarming. You don't notice it. It's so slow. You don't mm-hmm. notice that actually, you know, you at first you might drink half a bottle and that absolutely floors you.
Yeah.
5 years later, this, of course it's a bottle.
Yeah.
At some point it becomes, well, I'll buy two because I don't want to run out, you know, one bottle might not be enough.
Yeah. Or it's a bottle, then it's, oh, I'll just open the gin and I'll have a gin and tonic as well. Yeah. You know, I would start with a gin and tonic because I knew I had a bottle in the fridge, but that maybe wouldn't be quite enough. And it's that mindset of it's never enough.
Yeah, I know. It's frightening. I saw somebody that I know. I saw somebody in the shop the other day and they had a bottle and one of the small, very small bottles that I think, you know, get for your gravy or something. But
yeah,
I caught myself thinking, not really anything about her, but I would remember that I might buy the bottle and then the small bottle to have one glass afterwards. But in the end, I just bought two bottles. And then I would remember, I'm only going to have, if I open the second bottle, I'm only having one glass. And then going to bed, like not remember going to bed, waking up the next morning thinking, oh, I hope there's only one glass worth gone in that.
Uh-huh.
Waking up and realizing there's only one glass left.
Left,
thinking,
yeah.
Oh, for God's sake, that's why I feel so bad today. And I'm so annoyed at myself. And so, yeah, it's scary to think. I always felt like I stopped drinking when I was at that like bottle and half place.
Mm-hmm. But
there are people, and maybe listening to this now, that have used or are still using two bottles, you know, maybe going on to the third, you know, or two.
Absolutely.
And, you know, that is frightening. So I suppose in some ways for us, we're lucky that we got off when we did, because who knows mm-hmm. where that goes, right? That is quite frightening to think about. Where does that actually end up?
Where does it end? Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So talk to me about when you stopped. Did you have other stints? Did you just go for it? Like, what happened in that box story?
Yeah. So I think my main bit of sobriety that I ever experienced was when I was pregnant with my first child. So that was literally the first time I'd ever had a break since starting drinking, because I was never a dry January person. It was just, I just couldn't understand why people would do it. It was ridiculous to me. So when I fell pregnant, I was like, oh, this is going to be a huge test. I look back now on my pregnancy really fondly. I felt amazing during pregnancy. And I now realize that was partly down to the fact that I wasn't drinking. I thought pregnancy just, you know, was giving me all these lovely feels. It was because I wasn't hungover and I was fresh every day. Even though I had the normal pregnancy exhaustion, you still felt like 10 times better than with a hangover. So I then was counting down the days to, you know, start drinking again, because I remember when my daughter was born, I was like, right, how much can you drink if you're breastfeeding? You know, I remember like obsessively Googling, can you still drink wine when you're breastfeeding? Working out how much time I needed to leave between, because my daughter was obviously my priority. I wanted to exclusively breastfeed if I could. But I was so conflicted because I was like, but I really do still want to have that kind of part of me back. Mm. So that was a real eye opener, I think, because I realized at that point, I think I had been kidding myself up till that point that I had any kind of problem. Mm. And then I realized this isn't great. This is not good. And I remember it was Christmas. She was born in the November. It was Christmas Day, a month later. And I was at my Christmas dinner with family, and I wasn't offered a second glass of cava. And I remember thinking, like, I was furious mm-hmm. and it really hit a nerve. And I felt like I was being excluded, I was left out. And I was like, you know, it wasn't my problem. It was why am I not? But it was my problem. And it's just so telling now. So anyway, I think I just got to a place then that, you know, a few years later, as I'd said, difficult relationship, also a relationship breakdown. a bit of a meltdown, starting to face up to a lot of trauma from my past, also started therapy. So a combination of a lot of different things. And then lockdown hit. And then I found myself living as a single woman, single mum, on my own. Half of the time I was literally on my own because my daughter was with her dad, and I could drink on my own, nobody passing judgment. And I just found myself in a really dark place. But I had started the therapy, so I also was working on myself, but realized, I think through therapy, how much it was holding me back. And I was like, I'm not going to progress past a certain point unless I address my drinking. So that was really the final straw. The rest is history.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, that must have been so lonely for you in lockdown. I've talked openly about my experience as a single parent. It wasn't in lockdown, mind, but I still had, when the girls were at their dad's, I had very, very lonely weekends and lonely evenings as well. You know, when you go from being part of a partnership or part of a couple and having children, to then, you know, it's not like when you don't have children, you can go out and start cycling and running and meeting up and going out with friends. You know, you've got to stay in the house. You know, you have to be at home. So whether you're at home with children and you can't get out, or whether you're at home and your children are at the other parents and you're just completely on your own, all your mum friends are doing family things.
Exactly.
So no one's around, you know, you haven't got that same pool of friendships that you have perhaps when you're not a parent, if that makes sense.
Exactly. It absolutely does.
It's lonely. It's such a lonely time. And I think that really challenged me as well and wrapped up my drinking, because I remember that I would plan nice things or do things that were quite commendable. Like I would do races, like 5K races or even triathlons. I went through that thing, you know, is that
amazing? Yeah.
Late 30s, single mom, let's buy a bike and learn how to run and do all the things. But I would come back from those events. I got one memory in particular. I came back from an event. I think it was all over by lunchtime and I didn't have anyone to be with. And it was a Saturday and I got in the bath and drank a bottle of Prosecco. Thought that I was living a dream, you know, but actually it was quite lonely. And then when it came to sort of like 3 or 4 o'clock after that bottle was done, it was just like, what do you do now? You know,
it's a difficult one, because I think, like you say, you fool yourself into thinking this is great, I've got lots of time to do all these nice things, but if the thing that you're doing is drinking, it's just that vicious circle. And then you wake up the next day, you're like, oh, I wish I'd done something else with my evening. But I woke up so many days feeling and I think that's the thing about when I was drinking as well, I'd wake up every day already setting the tone for the day on a negative, you know, that internal voice going, why did you drink last night? Why are you so, you know, weak? Why can't you just, you know, not do it? And it's that monologue.
You. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. Which every day, pretty much every day, has got to be doing some damage, hasn't it?
Like, it must do.
To your self-confidence, your self-esteem, your self-worth, and that lack of self-love. Like, I do think it's really hard to develop those emotional tools when you are drinking and hating yourself.
Absolutely. My therapist, you know, sort of said exactly that to me, that it was a strange one, because my therapist never actually directly addressed my drinking with me, but she kind of guided me there in such a way that I realized, I was like, okay, I'm working, I'm running all the time, I'm going to the gym, I've got rid of, you know, a toxic relationship, I'm doing my best as a mum. But I was like, it's that bottle of wine. And I just realized it's that constant, you're just never getting past a certain level of progress when that's going on, if it's problematic for you. And I think anyone that's listening to this, I think you know, don't you, when it's taking up way too much headspace. And I think that's the point that it becomes an issue, is if you're waking up and saying, I shouldn't drink tonight, I'm definitely not drinking tonight, and then you find yourself drinking that night, that's when you think you're not in control anymore.
Yeah. But it takes, and you will know this from your experience on social media and your influence and how you help people, same as me, like, people do know that more often than not, that they shouldn't drink. They're really clear on it. They're especially clear on it at 9 a.m. But for a number of different reasons, people do struggle to get over the line and make the jump and make the choice. So it'd be interesting for you to, if you can, just to sort of explain that a little bit more. So I totally understand, you know, you had this, you know, therapy, which is fantastic, that to have that kind of resource, and that it became apparent that this is something that you needed to do. If I'm being honest, I felt like I should have stopped drinking for 10 years. Like, I knew that I should do that, but I didn't do it for a number of different reasons, mainly because I struggled to get over the line, actually just make the jump. How did you actually do that?
Yeah, I know. And it's like, it's the biggest question, and it's something that you're always asked, I suppose, when you're talking about your own sobriety journey. Like, what was it? Like, how did you get started? And I honestly, Terry, I didn't even sit on the 31st of December and think, right, I'm going to stop drinking. I need to stop drinking for good. This is not. All I thought was, it's the end of the year. I want the next year to be a positive one. I really want to start focusing on myself and prioritizing my health, my mental health specifically, and really just like stopping blaming outside factors for my own problems, you know. And I think that when you get brutally honest with yourself and you start to think, right, why is my life the way it is right now? Why do I feel the way that I feel right now? Who's responsible for that? And I think it was a light bulb moment for me when I realized, yes, there's always going to be, you know, challenges. There's going to be people who try and bring you down, or, you know, remind you of things that maybe are not so pleasant. But at the same time, it's like, I'm in control. I am the one that can control this. So that was the moment for me when I realized, like, stop making excuses and start moving to action and try something new. What have you not tried yet? Well, I know what I haven't tried yet. I haven't tried sobriety. And genuinely, I followed Sophie, so Sober and Happy. And as we both know, she's the biggest legend. I love her to bits. And she was just so relatable. And I found her page and I'd followed it for like a year. And I would quietly observe, you know, sometimes I'd add comments and stuff, but I was so inspired by her and her journey because she was similar age to me. She just seemed so like me in so many ways, you know, just like a normal 30 something woman who was just living a happy life without alcohol. And I was like, how is she doing this? I was like amazed by it. And I thought, okay, like, it doesn't appear like she is missing out. You know, she's just done her hen weekend sober. She's just getting married without booze. She's got a wee boy and she's now pregnant again. I was like, she's living her life. And I was like, I want that. So I've said to her many a time, you know, without that inspiration, I'm not sure I would have been, you know, pushed to do it. But I think that's why I love my page so much, because sometimes you think you just don't know who is watching and who might be feeling the same feelings. And that is so powerful to me. I just think, like, you know, same with you, Terry, like listening to these podcast episodes, you think even if it's just one person that hears, you can do it. And it's not actually as terrifying as it seems when you start on the journey. And I think for me, it was just a, right, let's get through January. Let's do a month of not drinking. Can I do that? Yes, I can. And I am very stubborn and headstrong when I put my head to something. So that helped. And then, you know, you get a month in and I was like, oh, I'm going to try and get to 100 days. I was like, 100 days is huge. Can you imagine? And I remember telling my friend that I was going to do 100 days sober. And she was like, laughing in my face practically, like, are you kidding? She's like, never. And then I did, because I was like, oh sure,
yeah.
And then I got there, and then that's the point I set up a page, because I was like, right, I have to do something now that's going to keep me accountable, because I hadn't really made any sober connections or friendships, or it was just all people in my real life. And to a point, that's okay, but I think long term you really need to connect with people who get it and who will celebrate your wins on a level that they, you know, they really understand how much graft you have put in to get where you are, how the daily commitment that you have to make to sobriety to stay sober.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely spot on. There's something about being involved in a community or being with people that are on the same journey that no one else can understand like those people can. They just get it. Everything from friends not being supportive, or, you know, having challenges with partners or family, worrying about your first holidays. How do you do sober summer, sober Christmas? What is sober dancing like? It's so awkward.
Yeah.
Everything, you know, it's like there is this bunch of people out there that just totally, totally get it and totally understand. And it's a level of understanding that you can't give unless you've been on that journey, unless you really know what that world is like. And we both absolutely adore Sophie anyway. So if Sophie is listening, hello, my darling. But yeah, no, she's a total legend. And we were talking about her before we came on. You know, we both celebrated 5 years together last week, actually. We went for a little...
I know. Like, congratulations, by the way. Yeah. It's incredible.
Thank you so much. Yeah, so it's a special time. But to be honest, I say this all the time as well when I talk to people. I cannot believe how quickly time goes by. I mean, it just blows my mind that you could. I was like you. I remember trying to get to 100 days. I think I took photos of almost every day of me, like 60 days and 64 days and 73 days. And getting to 100 was just such a big deal. Mm-hmm. And it is a big deal. But then I just, at some point, I don't know whether it was like 6 or 8 months in, and it just, I almost felt like I stopped counting. I mean, I did count still, obviously, but
yeah,
a daily thing anymore. I wasn't really overly checking every day. It just, it became almost a bit of an afterthought that quickly, which blew my mind. And then now it's like 5 years. And same with you, you must feel the same. Like now it's nearly 3.5 years.
Yeah. I do, and I say this to people as well who are starting out, because, you know, people are like, what day count app do you use, and et cetera, et cetera, and how do you get through Fridays or weekends? And I always think, you know, and it's good to hear you saying the same, that we both were so reliant on that day count and seeing that number going up so you know, so important at the start. And it's because every day is a win, and you think, oh God, is it ever going to feel easier? Is it ever going to become like second nature? Because how can it? And then it's suddenly you reach a Saturday and you're like, oh, I never even thought about Wyden last night. And you think, yes, that is the moment that you're like, oh, yeah, it's getting easier. And it does come. It really, really does. You've just got to push through and push through the hard days until suddenly you don't really care what day you're on. You're just living your life.
You're just doing it, aren't you? Mm-hmm. And so talking about that then, that kind of first 100 days, I appreciate it's a bit of a while now, but two things. What did you do to support yourself in that 100 days to make not drinking a bit easier? And what did you kind of remember experience-wise from that?
Okay. Yeah, good question. So the 100 days, I will say I went into that extremely prepared. So I didn't go into it blindly. I did the research, you know. I remember fully immersing myself in sobriety, everything. And I think it is really important, because if you educate yourself enough on all things alcohol and what it's actually physically doing to you, mentally doing to you, and also I think also giving yourself the grace that it's not your fault that you are relying on this substance. It's so addictive. Mm-hmm. And so I did a lot of research. I listened to a lot of TED Talks, podcasts, you know, lives on Instagram. And then I downloaded Audible Quitlet books. So I wasn't one for just sitting reading a book because I can't sit still. So I decided I would download Quitlet. So that's, if it, for anyone who doesn't know, it's books all around, you know, quitting alcohol. And I would go out for walks. So I'd go for a long walk, stick a podcast in all about all the benefits of not drinking. And I was just feeding my brain with all this good vibes around why it was such a good thing to be doing. So that helped massively. Again, the walking was good because it got me out of the house. So I tend to try and be away from my kitchen around witching hour, you know, 5 o'clock, when I would generally be going for the wine. I tried not to be there. Or I would, even as far as like, I literally had to stop cooking certain things for a long time. So I didn't cook like spaghetti bolognese for probably like a year. That's so weird now, but like I would always put red wine in it, and or risotto was always white wine in my risotto. So I just stopped cooking these things because I was like, I can't cook it without wanting to buy a bottle of wine to use. So things like that. And then also, what else did I do? Coloring in. I spoke about this before. I would, if I felt like my hands were, so I felt like I missed having a glass of wine in my hands, I got this mindful coloring in book from Amazon, and really nice coloring pens, like proper fancy ones. And it felt like a treat to sit and just like think about things, process my thoughts, maybe stick another Quitlet audiobook on and do some coloring in. It was just keep busy. That's the main thing. And then I think the emotions that I felt, how did I actually feel during those 100 days? Well, I felt empowered. I think that's the biggest thing that I felt. I felt every day that I was waking up that I hadn't drank, I was like, oh my God, like I'm doing this. And it's that feeling of empowerment that you start to get as your day count's going up and you're feeling a bit fresher, your energy levels are rising, you are waking up rather than giving yourself, you know, that sort of self-sabotage, negative mindset every morning. You're waking up and you're like, yes, Jade, like you've done it. Do it again tonight and keep going. And so there was a lot of positivity in that 100 days for me. I know there's a lot of difficult things, but I think when I think back to those 100 days, I definitely did have a bit of pink cloud vibes going on. So I was very, you know, energized and excited about the future. And for good reason, because now when I look back, I think, well, I knew at that point life was about to change in ways that I couldn't even imagine. And honestly, Terry, like 3 years ago, if you'd have said to me now, I'd be in a relationship with a person that I still pinch myself now that I've met him. He is incredible. We have the best relationship, communication. We're now, you know, going to be having a baby and we live together. And it's just, none of that would have happened if I hadn't stopped drinking. And that's, I think, the message I want to put out there, is that it can change your life in ways that you just couldn't even imagine.
Oh, it's so powerful, isn't it? So powerful.
Yeah.
I've been a bit like that as well. I honestly don't think I would have had my Sadie, who's three.
Yeah.
At 43 years old.
That's amazing.
Had I not stopped drinking at 41 years old. Mm-hmm. I think, mm-hmm. And I didn't, you know, I was very fortunate. I managed to get pregnant naturally, which is, you know, not necessarily that common in your 40s. Mm-hmm. Which I do feel very grateful. And I do believe that lots and lots of things came up for me, lots of opportunities, lots of good things came up for me. And I do believe a lot of that is because I stopped drinking, you know, doing better at work, buying my first home, which, you know, again, was quite late to it, but buying my first home, you know, meeting my partner, and getting married, having a baby. Aww. And just, yeah, just look, having this podcast, all the other things that come off the back of being in this space. You know, it's something to feel very proud of and very, very grateful for, I think.
Absolutely. I just got goosebumps when you were saying that, Terry, because it's so true. And, oh, like, I think when you start believing in yourself and you start being consistently good to yourself and to others, good things happen. And that's it. You know, it's like positivity does breed positivity. And it's that kind of momentum that you get in sobriety where you're just doing better for yourself. And it does pay off for sure.
Yeah. I think you put yourself in a position where you can just actually take very good care of yourself.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, that is just in itself. I mean, it's an amazing thing to be able to achieve, is just to be able to take really good, proper care of yourself.
Yeah.
To have the space to do that, to have the clarity. And yeah, of course, we are both coming at this from a lens of, we're both over 3 years in, you know, and I'm always conscious that for someone who's in, either not made the decision yet or is on day 10, life mm-hmm. looks probably quite a lot more bleak, you know, than
absolutely
that in that place. Like, but again, I think we both talk from experience. You know, it's not like we've not had that experience and look at here we are. We've both been to our own versions of our rock bottom, which is where mm-hmm. we got to the point where it was, you know, this, it's enough. I don't want it anymore. I don't want to feel this way anymore. I always had that overwhelming feeling like, is this really it? Mm-hmm. Is this all it is, life?
Yeah.
Doing this every day or just feeling like this all the time and never really feeling like, always feeling suboptimal, you know, just sort of,
100%.
Horrible feeling. And so we've obviously, we're talking about this being kind of further on, but we've definitely been on that early journey. And I think the thing that I relate to you actually a lot is your enthusiasm and optimism in your first 100 days. I was like that too. You know, everybody approaches it slightly differently, I think. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everyone has their own experience and that's valid for them. My experience was I was really excited, to be honest. I felt like now I'm ready now. I really want to change my life. I really want to see what I'm capable of. I really want to push myself to see what I can do and what I can achieve. And I had no idea what I was getting involved in, if I'm being honest. I was just stopping drinking because it was bad.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I was, one dimensional as it felt back then. I'm just going to stop drinking. And I know that's been challenging at times, but that's what I'm doing. I had no idea it was going to lead on to lots and lots of other things and other opportunities and lots of self-growth. You know, I had no idea of that. So, but I did feel like there was a bubbling excitement. It was almost like the fear and also the excitement of the unknown.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. It gives you a bit of a buzz, doesn't it?
It does give you a buzz. And I was also like you, I can be quite stubborn with myself as well. You know, if I'm going to set a challenge, I'm going to do it. I'm not going to find limitations. I'm going to do it. You know,
love that.
So I think that some of that, where those personality or character traits come from, who knows? But, you know, some of those traits definitely helped me through some of the early days. It was always a case of when, you know, I can mm-hmm. do this, never if. It was always if. No, when. It was always that energy. What do I need to do? You know, not can I do it? So I you know, that kind of really carried me through. But you're thinking about the kind of like talking about the challenges, just to bring some of that into focus. What were the hardest bits for you, do you think? Not mm-hmm. just inside the 100 days, but in your journey so far?
Yeah, the hardest bit for me is, and it still is to this day, the feeling of being different and being an outsider now. You know, there, that doesn't really go away. And I do sometimes feel that, you know, I have, even 3 and a bit years on, I had it at the weekend. You're in Sainsbury's car park and you're just going about your day. And then you catch a glimpse of somebody loading up their car with boxes of beer. And then I rabbit hole down a fantasy world of, oh, they're away to go home and they're going to have an ice cold beer. They're maybe going out tonight. Maybe she's going to get all dressed up and go out and get a bit drunk with her friends. And how lovely. Like, and then it's that FOMO that kind of washes over you now and again. And even though I know the reality is that's the glam side of it. And then you have and I posted about this on Instagram this weekend, you know, the 3 a.m. scrap, the wait for a taxi and the freezing cold, the sore feet, the hangover the next day, the lost phone, you know, all the stuff that's horrendous and makes you feel so crap. You don't think about that in that moment. You're just, your brain is instinctively going, you can't do that anymore. And it's framing that. It's the constant reframe when that happens of going, yes, but what can I do now that I don't drink? And trying to just reset my brain constantly. And that, I thought that might have gone away, and it does happen less and less, but definitely the social aspect of, you know, weddings, big family occasions, nights out with my friends happen rarely now anyway, so it's not really a big deal because we're all parents. But, you know, it's just that feeling of, it's a challenge because you have to push yourself sometimes to be social when alcohol is that lubricant, isn't it? So sometimes you would have a couple of drinks and it just loosens you up and you just feel a little bit more fun. And like you say, you take it from a 10 to a 12 or a 13. It's becoming comfortable with the uncomfortable and just realizing that maybe I'm not as wild or as hilarious or as full of confidence and extrovertedness than I thought I was. But that's okay. Mm. This is actually who I really am. And if I'm not comfortable with something, I now have to just own it and say, I'm going to sit this one out. So that's been hard, but it's been also very rewarding as well.
Yeah, I love that. I think a lot of people would take a lot of comfort from that. I think that social aspect comes up a lot, for people, and understandably so. You know, we've built lives off the back of 2 or 3 or 4 decades of socializing with alcohol. We see it on telly. We see it in music videos. Not that anyone watches music videos anymore,
it's everywhere.
But you know what I mean? Like we've been so heavily conditioned. You know, the glamorization of alcohol has been so well done in our lifetime. I mean,
hasn't it?
You know, I always think big alcohol have done such a phenomenal job. The buggers. In convincing, you know, but they have, you know, and that's part of the reason why I think that is, you know, it is challenging. I also wonder whether there is an element of when your life naturally changes though as well. You know, it's like moving through seasons of life as well, isn't it? So it's like that letting go of, I'm just, whether I was drinking or not, I'm just never going to be in that gaggle of girls putting my makeup on. And getting the taxi tipsy and laughing at stuff that's not even really funny, but you all think is hilarious. You know, it's almost like, it's like chapters of your life, isn't it?
That definitely.
You have to kind of close a bit, I think. And drinking just probably accelerates that a little bit because perhaps it closes the chapter on something sooner than you would have done, you know, had you carried on drinking. I mean, I've definitely been to festivals where there have been, I went to a festival, I think it was like a ladies' night or something. And there were lots of women partying, having a good time, you know, with friends, drinking. There were all different ages there.
Yeah.
I remember there was one extremely glamorous woman in her sort of, I don't know, maybe she was in her mid-late 50s. I didn't ask her age, so I don't know, but I got that vibe. And she just, she was beautiful, really glamorous. And a couple of hours later, she was absolutely shit-faced.
Yeah.
She was like falling all over the place. Bless her. She was like, really. And I thought to myself when I looked at her, it's like, gosh, I definitely would have been that person. Like, no judgment. That would have been me.
Yes.
If I didn't stop drinking, I would be her for sure. For sure. So
yeah.
I think that, you know, sometimes you just maybe, you just, I guess in some ways, it's like you kind of grow out of that stuff.
You do.
Some people don't. But so it's almost like, yeah, it's the drinking, not drinking, that creates that FOMO. But I wonder as well whether it's just the ebbs and flows of the different things you do, the chapters of life, in a way.
That's so true. And I hadn't really thought about it like that before. Maybe that would have naturally just happened anyway, even though I was still drinking. Because like you say, your friendship change, you have different priorities, you have children, you have, you know, your weekends are precious. You don't want to spend them rough. But now I just don't spend any of them rough. But one thing I was going to say there when you were speaking about that is another challenge was starting a new relationship sober. So it was amazing and I loved it because you have to go into it completely authentic. There's no hiding behind a glass of wine before you go on a first date, is there? So you really, like, I think it's such a good basis for starting a relationship because you're bringing nothing but you. And there have been moments where I've thought, oh, I'd really like to experience just like a boozy night out where we go for dinner and have a bottle of wine or whatever. But again, my partner is so supportive in that, in my sobriety, in terms of, you know, he still drinks, but he's not, you know, not a lot, and it doesn't trigger me in any way, which is great. But that kind of support when I've had wobbles, you know, before my sister's wedding, I remember having a really big wobble where I thought, if I had a glass of fizz in the morning and pretended it was alcohol free, but it was actually really Prosecco, nobody would know. Because, and I don't know why I thought I would maybe like to do that, but I think it was just because it was such a big occasion and my whole family were going to be there, people from America. And when do you get that opportunity again? But why I thought alcohol would enhance that, I don't know. But anyway, he was like, absolutely not. Because I think when you find yourself having thoughts like that, to lessen the power that they have over you, say them out loud to somebody. And as soon as I said it out loud to him, he was like, no.
Yeah.
And it was just what I needed to do. And anyway, that was, it was a fleeting thought and it didn't happen, thankfully. But it just reminded me that sobriety is so, so fragile when you're maybe feeling a bit vulnerable.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, that obviously you can see when you look at that scene replaying in your head when you're, I mean, when was that wedding? How far?
November.
Oh, November.
Last, right? November. Yeah.
So, you know, it's still, I mean, even though you make huge strides when you stop drinking and when the months and the years rack up, you know, you create a new version of yourself in those situations. You create a new brain conditioning, but it doesn't mean the old one goes away completely. Mm. You know, sometimes in those moments of high anxiety, big wedding, big event, feeling like the only one that's not doing the thing that everyone's doing. So huge,
the
different relatives, one-off experience. You can see how all these blocks of anxiety just sort of build and then tip you over the edge of like the immediate connection in your brain, that first one, and suddenly kind of accidentally goes left instead of going right, the new road, it goes left.
Yes.
Get the drink, you know. And
yes.
It's like, you have to check in with yourself in those moments, but it just shows you that conditioning can still hang around for a long time. I think it was quite interesting for you starting your relationship sober. I was slightly different in that I did actually meet my husband when I was drinking, but I was in that zone. I think I drank for about 2 years of our relationship. We've been together 7 years.
Okay.
I drank 2 years of the relationship, but we didn't live together for the first year, at least, maybe year and a half. So I could still drink on my own. And I had many nights of just drinking on my own, talking rubbish to him down the phone. And which, you know, because we talk a lot on the telephone and that was always fine. But I used alcohol for all the you know, for all the things and for all the occasions, for all the weekends, for, you know, and he didn't really drink a lot either. He's very take it or leave it. He probably drank more just because I was drinking.
Because you were, yeah.
I was drinking, yeah. And so then when I stopped drinking, I had to, you know, I really felt that contrast of, oh my God, I've got to, it's almost like restarting the relationship in some ways, not in every way, obviously, but, you know, just being intimate and all of those things.
Yes.
It was very scary. Like,
I can imagine.
I felt very vulnerable and very naked in those situations. Part of the fun of it. You know, I just felt, it was tough. Like, there were moments where I felt very awkward and, you know, things were new and I was having to navigate things. All my first social situations, you know, that we would do as a couple, I would be doing sober. And so I would be different. I think he actually, in hindsight, he never said it at the time. He was very good. But I think when we talk about it now, I think he always thought that actually there was a big improvement straight away. I just think he really embraced the sober me, you know.
That's brilliant.
A bit more even than the one that was drinking. But I don't really know how much he knew. I don't think he was aware. I think he thought sometimes the timings of my drinking were a bit unusual. Like, why did I really need a glass of wine at 10 o'clock when I arrived somewhere late? Like, why do you need that? You know, and I'd be like, I just need it. I'm just telling you, I need to wind down and I need it because, you know, but.
Yeah, relate.
Outside of that, I don't think he wasn't overly perhaps aware of how much I might have been drinking, but
it's really interesting to hear that and hear like the difference between, you know, I suppose that there's pros and cons of both, isn't there? But starting a relationship where you just have to do it all at the start, but it's the same when you have to do it a couple of years in, because you are bringing that, okay, I don't have the bravado, I just have to bring myself to every situation. And I'm so glad it was so supportive, and it means everything, doesn't it, when you're going through something like that? Because a lot of relationships, I think there's a lot of worry, and I read things like, I'm on Mum's Net at the moment because I'm obviously pregnant, and I'm reading all these forums, and a lot of them are, I have concerns over my partner's drinking, or, you know, and it's so interesting when you start to read everyone's conversations around it. And so many relationships are in trouble because one partner is drinking so much and the other one is struggling to navigate that because they love that person, but they don't know how to support them and they don't know how to help them stop. And I think that, you know, there's a lot to say about, support when that other person does want to stop. And some people follow my page and they're not sober, but their partner's trying to get sober and they want to follow to support them. And they've reached out to me and just said, you know, I really appreciate your posts because it helps me understand how he might be feeling or she might be feeling. And it's just, it's great. And it means the world to people who are trying, I think.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think on the flip side of that as well, which is also something that I think creates a huge challenge in the world of drinking, is when you've been with a partner for a very long time and your relationship has been built on a foundation of booziness, and then the person stops and the other person, you know, they're struggling to find their feet in how to navigate that not being the relationship lubricant anymore, or that conversational you know, thing that you do on a Friday or Saturday, have a bottle of wine together when the kids are in bed, and that's your connection, and that's been your connection all that time. When that goes away, that can be very challenging as well. And I think that sometimes that can also create, I don't love the word relapse, but it can create kind of going back into drinking. Mm-hmm. That becomes very, very tricky and difficult to navigate because the expectations on the other partner is that they don't really maybe support the drinking, or they don't really like the not drinking, sorry. But equally, maybe the partner that stops drinking is struggling with the connection and potentially attraction of having a really boozy partner when that's not their world anymore. So that creates, I think, that can create chaos as well. It's It's probably a podcast episode in itself, really. It's the whole kind of navigating sober relationships or previously drinking and now sober. It's a big topic.
Yeah,
I'm the same as you. I definitely get people reaching out about that subject alone. So before we go into your tips, what has been your biggest gain in sobriety?
Biggest gain is, I've mentioned before, but the consistency that I have achieved in all sort of aspects of my life. So consistency in my self-care. So whether that be exercise, you know, mental health, everything. The consistency and momentum has been my biggest gain, because like you said earlier, my career has benefited because I'm just more switched on. I'm more alert and sharp. So every area of my life has improved. To put it short.
Sobriety is it's like your magic pill, isn't it? It is the magic pill.
yeah. It's not to be underestimated.
Yeah, absolutely. And so thinking about your three tips then, what three tips would you give people who are stopping, trying to stop drinking or have already stopped, and just to give them a boost along their journey?
Yeah, so I think the first one I thought about was find your sober people. So however you do that, I think the main thing for me has been connecting with other people who understand how it feels and understand the challenges and the dedication that it takes to be sober. So whether that's, you know, AA meetings, if that's your thing, or whether that's Instagram and following sober accounts and reaching out to people, or it might be looking for a local meetup group, because there's often, you know, local meetups with people who are in the sober sort of sphere. That helps a lot, and gives you that feeling that you're not alone, because it can be quite an isolating time, especially at the start. And the second tip I would say is having that toolkit in your mind for those moments of FOMO that I mentioned earlier on. So when you are doing your weekend shop and you're seeing everyone stocking up their trolleys with their bottles of wine and Prosecco, remember in those moments exactly why you're doing it and exactly why it's not worth it just for one night of escapism or to fit in with the crowd. Be proud of being different. You know, it is so inspiring to me, the people that step away from the crowd and step away from things that are affecting them and impacting their lives in a negative way. And although it's hard, just remember your whys, have that toolkit. So I have the playing the tape forward. You hear that so much in sobriety, don't you? But it's so true. It's like, think about the reality of the situation rather than the fantasy of it, because there's always like 10 negatives for the one positive about drinking, I would say. Yeah. And then the third tip I would say is, don't, as much as I've loved my day count, don't get hung up on the day count, because I know that certain people will, won't manage first time. And I think that sometimes you have to try again. You might have to try 10 times before it sticks, and you hear that a lot. And I see people maybe get so far into sobriety, maybe do a month or 40 days or something, and they're like, I'm not feeling the benefits, I'm not feeling like I'm seeing all these people talking about on Instagram, and it's just not that great. And then they'll go back and start drinking again. And I think that there's an amazing blog post, and I've spoken about this before, by Claire Pooley, and it's, I think, the Field of Bunnies. It's excellent, and it's basically just describing how, you know, it's only once you start maybe getting past the 100 days, the really hard bit, that you start to feel the huge benefits. So the people who are maybe relapsing quicker aren't feeling that real change, and it's just having faith, holding on. Don't be disheartened if you relapse and go back and your day count's back to zero, because you know you can do 30 days. You know you can do 40 days. Just push it a little bit further. Keep the end goal of you know, feeling great in mind. Not a, doesn't always have to be a number, is what I'm trying to say. And yeah, that's my tips.
Yeah, great tips. Really good. I think I think that the last one is excellent as well. And hopefully people will find that quite reassuring. I know certainly people in my community or that I'm working with, some of them are having that anxiety about starting again, counting the days. Mm-hmm. You know, I always say, but you're here, you know, at least you're still here, you're still trying. You know, a lot of people don't get here. And so it's great that you're even here. So, yeah, exactly. Okay, Jade, so nice to catch up with you. Thank you so much. So just remind everyone how they can find you on Instagram to follow your fabulous journey.
Sure. Thank you for having me, Terry. If you want to follow my journey, I am on Instagram at Scottish and Sober. So love if you came and followed my wild ride. And yeah, thanks again, Terry. I've absolutely loved chatting to you today. It's been great. It's
been really good. We covered things I wasn't expecting, and that's what I always love about this show. And yeah, all the very best with your pregnancy. Looking forward to seeing those pictures on your grid. And you smashing sober mum of two.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. And thank you to everybody else. Goodbye.
Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. If you're interested in being a guest, please contact me directly on Instagram by sending a message to @sassysobermum. You can also find helpful tools and resources on my website, sassysobermum.com. If you enjoyed the podcast and you want to spread the love, please like, share, and rate the podcast. I really look forward to next time. See you then.